Welcome to Hope Is Here. My name is Greg Horn, and we're continuing our conversation with Lynn and Janine Buckles. Yesterday, we heard about how Lynn, after having pretty good health overall, just started feeling bad, and next thing you know, he's rushed into surgery, and he had a ruptured esophagus, and the surgeon told he and his wife that he had a 10% chance of surviving the surgery. He did survive that, but unfortunately went through four more surgeries. In 90 days, he lost 45 pounds, and that's where we were able to complete yesterday's program. But, man, you need to take a listen to that if you want to hear all about what he overcome with God's help, a very supportive wife. Go to our website, hopeishere.today. That's hopeishere.today. So, Lynn, you've lost the 45 pounds. You made it through all the surgeries, and miraculously, you got to go home February 11th after starting the first surgery on November 11th. But obviously, a lot of us would like to lose weight, but not that much and not that way. But you even had to learn to walk again, didn't you?
I really did. You know, I mean, I remember in January, you know, because the doctor must come and see you. You gotta start working out. And I remember some days I'd have a hard time even getting out of the bed and even to stand up. And some days would need help. And so the walking would be just a few steps down the hallway. Some days it would just be standing up out of my bed and sitting back down. But it was interesting over just a few days, in a week or two. I mean, you know, toward the last couple of weeks before my last surgery, I was walking downstairs into the main floor, walking around. I made a track around the hospital, and I'd always end up at the chapel and go to the chapel and sit down and just sit in quietness and prayer and just thanking God that I was getting stronger and just kind of sit there. And it was a very peaceful experience. And sometimes I'd walk out and they'd be, one time I remember going down, they were having this huge reception for some medical folks. And actually the CEO of St. Joe was down there. And everybody, you know, we're in the hospital in 90 days. Everybody knows who you are in a sense. I mean,
he was famous.
I was told by one friend that came up that he couldn't, I was listed under Joseph Buckles, so he didn't know my first name. And they wouldn't let him come up, but the guard was down there. Security, oh, that's Lynn Buckles. And said, you can go on up. I said, I know who that guy is. I don't know if I ever actually met that man. But the CEO knew my story, and he wanted to talk to me, and we engaged there. I was in my gown. Everybody else was in suit and tie, and I felt like really weird. I got pajamas on and a gown. I got a tube in my nose. Carrying my chest tube pack. But they just really enjoyed, you know, getting to engage. And, yeah, they were wonderful. I mean, they were absolutely wonderful. Matter of fact, I was there so long, they gave me a certificate of adoption. It says, Mr. Joseph L. Buckles has become one of the family, and signed by Ann Jones. And she was wonderful. She saw me every day. And, yeah, it was a lot of challenging things. Obviously, Janine had to see me in that state. I couldn't see me, thankfully. I didn't know a lot about some of the things that went on. I didn't know. I almost died again. I don't have any memory of that. But I remember starting to come back, and I felt like, man, I knew I was something's not right. Mentally, I'm not on. And I was confused a lot, and I didn't know where I was at sometimes. But all of a sudden, one day, it's like a turn. It's like an immediate turn. And even Janine came in, and she said, she just looked at me and said, something's different.
Yeah. And when you said something was different, what?
Well, what they call, and they say this is very typical. I didn't know it at the time. It's a hospital psychosis. When you've been in the hospital that long and been through as much trauma and been on a ventilator and all the medications that he was on, it's not unusual for someone to have this hospital psychosis. So he was kind of crazy for a while. I mean, even when he first came off the ventilator the second time, we were having to tie him down, had to restrain him because he was pulling at tubes and trying to get out of bed and saying, well, you couldn't even talk at first, but, you know, just craziness. I mean, I would come in during the day and I would let one of his hands go, but I'd have to hold on to it because if I didn't, he'd start pulling at things, you know. And eventually he got to where he calmed down, but his mental confusion was still there. And every day I'd come in and we'd have to say the same thing. He'd say, now what happened? And I'd have to explain to him again what was going on. And or he'd say, now why are we doing another surgery? He just couldn't remember it. And I would write it out for him and draw a picture of it for him to remember that. And one day I came in, he said, now, why am I on this airplane? You're not on an airplane. You're in a hospital. What makes you think you're on an airplane? He goes, oh, that's right. I'm not on an airplane. He thought that he was on an airplane and that the surgeon was the pilot taking him to St. Louis or somewhere. I mean, it was just craziness.
Well, I remember a lot of the hallucinations I had in dreams. I still remember a lot of those. And I remember having this recurring dream. I was getting on an airplane at Bluegrass pretty much every day, going to St. Louis, a commuter flight. Dr. Halpin was the pilot, and I was on the plane. That kept coming up all the time, at least in my mind.
Right.
And so part of that was they would come in, and they would do, what was it, a percussion?
Because his lungs needed to be cleared. He had fluid on his lungs. Yeah. They would do this thing on his bed. The respiratory therapist would come in, and they'd turn on the bed, and it would kind of vibrate and beat his back to try to clear his lungs out.
Okay.
And so I guess, and it would almost shake him out of the bed sometimes.
Well, it sounded kind of like almost like a small engine.
Yeah, so, it did.
Because I can remember in these dreams, I could hear this thing, and I could also feel the shaking. So it was like, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you'll fall asleep watching sports, and you'll be dreaming, and you'll hear the announcer's voice. It was kind of like a little bit of reality and a little bit of, you know, hallucination.
Yeah.
So,
but he really believed he was on an airplane.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But the day that I remember, one day, I think it was the day that you finally called me. Mm-hmm. He'd had his phone back for a little while, and before that, he didn't even know how to use the phone. But he called me. I was at work one day, and he called me, and I was so excited because he hadn't done that in weeks, hadn't been able to do that in weeks. And when I got to the hospital that afternoon, I could tell. It was different. He didn't ask me the questions, you know, why am I here? What's happened? It was like a normal hospital type day where I could just walk in and we could pick up where we were the day before. So I could tell a definite difference on that particular day. So it was very exciting, the little things.
Yeah, and it was pretty much all uphill after that.
Right.
Or downhill, I should say. I
mean, well.
It was easier
right.
for me. I mean, it was because I knew I was getting well. You know, I knew I had this surgery coming, so I never had a mindset that, other than the one time I heard Dr. Halpin say, I probably won't survive the surgery. I didn't sit around thinking I'm going to die. I just didn't have that kind of thought. It was more for me, oh my gosh, when am I going to get out of this place? I'm in a prison, you know. And sometimes I would get emotional at night when Janine would go home. And the wonderful thing was for me, and I think it's a rare thing. Crossroads at the time, Jim Baldry is one of our staff, and Steve Greenwell from Richmond, where I was in Richmond campus, they organized a team. That was two teams. They would come with me and stay with me after Jenny go home at 6 or 7, and stay to midnight. And then another team would come in, one or two people, and they'd stay all night with me and just sit there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And there were people on literally who wanted to come but didn't get to come because there was didn't have a place on the schedule for them. And Dr. Halpin would say to me, you don't know how blessed you are, how oftentimes I come out of surgery to go to the waiting room to tell the family, give them an update, and there's no family to talk to. So when he walked in the first night and saw there were 30 or 40
people. There were about 35 people in the waiting room.
Yeah. He was just like blown away. Who in the world are these people? You know, because he said, that's just so rare. So that's changed my perspective now when I go to the hospital to visit people, and I have much more empathy or compassion. Do not assume people had the family and friends that I had.
Yeah.
And so it was a real blessing.
But you answered one of my questions. I was going to ask that because I remember when I went to make my first hospital visit about 3 years ago. My dad had triple bypass, came out of it, and they said you can see him in about 45 minutes, and then 15 minutes later his heart went out of rhythm. And then he died. And he had a good run. He was 74 or so, and I know he's with Jesus. But I remember when I had to go literally about a week later, the first hospital visit was at St. Joe, and it was for somebody having triple bypass.
Hmm.
And I can tell you, I mean, I was nervous. I was weak.
Yeah.
But the empathy that you said, you know, it's one thing to sympathize, but I could empathize because I was sitting in that same room.
Right.
You know, and didn't get the good news and obviously didn't share that with them. But just knowing the nerves that you have and the feelings and the anxiousness. So you answered one of my questions. I was going to say you had to take your ministry level with pastoral care and things to a whole nother level, didn't it, Lynn?
It has. It has. And you know, I've been doing hospital calls a long time, but for me now to go into a hospital, there's just not a lot of anxiety for me about that anymore. Sometimes, you know, depending on the situation, but especially if I go to St. Joe's, it's like going home. I mean, it sounds weird, but it's like I go there and I don't see some of the same staff I used to see, but I know a couple of the chaplains, so I'll sometimes see them. But yeah, I walk in, I know exactly where to go. And interesting, here recently when I visited, there's been two or three times where I've visited people who are on the same floor that I was on for weeks, not in the same room, but on the same floor. So, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting dynamic now. It's just a different attitude for me. And I know going means a lot even more now. Just to go and spend a few minutes with someone has a huge impact, not by what I say, just by being there. Because one, it was never, as I got to feeling better and more alert, I was always concerned about people coming and staying with me because I felt like I don't have the energy to carry on conversations. So they made it very clear, he may not want to talk to you. And people were really good about just sitting there listening. You know, they might be reading something, watching TV, but they would not try to get me in the conversation, you know, which I really appreciate. I just didn't have the energy. I could talk for a few minutes and I'd be exhausted.
Yeah. Well, you talked about what the support meant to you. And, you know, for people listening saying, I want to bring hope to people, but I don't know what to do. I'm not a doctor, not a nurse. But even just a simple text that is saying, hey, we're thinking and praying for you, it means volumes, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And people were very sensitive to that, especially with me because I was, you know, carrying the load by myself. But I always had support from people, and they would always text or call, can we come, instead of just showing up. Now, there were some that were, you know, in the closest circle that would just show up, and that was fine, especially my girlfriends, my small group girlfriends. They would come anytime or text me anytime. Family would come, and, you know, his brothers, both of them were there. You know, one or the other one was there pretty much every week, traveled in from Tennessee.
From Nashville and Tri-Cities.
And my family from Louisville would come down. And but we always had people from the church or even friends that we went to school with, went to college with, would come and stay with him or come to visit. And it was amazing because during that time, I remember, especially when he was in the ICU, that I noticed that there were rooms where people didn't come and go at all. And there we were. I mean, it was constant people coming in. And I remember the nurses coming in and saying, now, what does he do? And because they were just confused by all these people coming up. And they would say, well, he must be really loved. I said, yes, he is very much loved. And so it became a little family, even in the hospital there. And they, people were just drawn to him. Even those that didn't even know him were drawn to him.
Well, and that's what I love as we close out this program today is that, you know, a lot of people I know have been hurt at the church. And, you know, church is full of people and people hurt
exactly.
People sometimes. But I tell you, when you get into crisis like Lynn and Janine Buckles, your church family is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And somebody that's listening today, you know, maybe you're listening to them and thinking, you know, I used to go to church, but either, you know, life got hard or somebody hurt me at church, got my feelings hurt. And I understand we've all been there, but I want to encourage you today to go back to your church. Or if you've never been to church, Crossroads is a great church. It's at the Andover campus off on Todd's Road. But man, when life gets hard, it's great to have a church family to gather around you. So maybe somebody today from hearing their story will do that. But tomorrow we're going to hear about how their faith helped carry them through all these surgeries. So I hope you'll tune in tomorrow and join me as I continue my conversation with Lynn and Janine Buckles on Hope Is Here. Are you looking for an upscale luxury used car? Look no further than Paradise Motorsports. Paradise Motorsports, located in Lexington on East New Circle Road, has quality vehicles at amazing prices. The owner, Rod, and his team will take great care of you. If you want to check out their selection of quality, upscale, luxury used cars, check them out online at ParadiseInventory.com. That's ParadiseInventory.com.